Hey, are you curious about what it takes to build a threat intelligence team within your organization? If so, you may want to tune in on October 10th for a webinar featuring myself and Brian Moore, the director of Flashpoint's Intelligence Academy. We're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of building a threat intelligence function. We'll discuss the best ways to determine intelligence requirements, optimize resources and capabilities within your team, and how to determine and evaluate key performance indicators. If you want to sign up, just point your web browser to securityledger.com/threatintel, one word, to register. Hello and welcome to the Security Ledger podcast. I'm Paul Roberts, the editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. In this week's episode number 115, the U.S. Department of Justice last week issued indictments for seven Russian nationals that it accused of a campaign of hacks against a range of Western organizations, including the World Anti-Doping Agency and the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. In our second segment this week, we talk with Adam Myers of the firm CrowdStrike about the hacks behind the charges and what comes next. But first, Bloomberg Businessweek owned the news cycle last week with a blockbuster story describing a sophisticated campaign by China's military to place compromised hardware directly onto motherboards made by a major U.S. supplier, Supermicro. The tale is backed up by more than a dozen unnamed sources within the Obama and Trump administrations. If true, the incident would be one of the only documented supply chain compromises and perhaps one of the largest. But did Bloomberg get the story right? In the days since it ran, companies including Apple and Amazon, not to mention Supermicro itself, have issued categorical denials of the facts presented by Bloomberg reporters. Both Apple and Amazon describe in their statements multiple internal investigations that failed to turn up evidence to verify any of the claims made in the story. Where does that leave us? To answer that question, we invited noted hardware hacker Joe Grand into the Security Ledger Studios. Grand, also known as Kingpin, is the founder of Grand Idea Studio, a San Francisco-based research and development firm. He's a noted expert on hardware-based vulnerabilities, and he was a technical resource for the Bloomberg reporters. In this interview, Joe says that the jury is still out on the substance of what the Bloomberg report alleges. In this conversation, Joe and I talk about how supply chain attacks work in theory, what they offer to attackers, and why attackers more often opt for less sophisticated means to achieve the same ends.
I'm Joe Grand, principal electrical engineer and hardware hacker.
Welcome to the Security Ledger podcast. Great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're talking today because really huge report came out from Bloomberg Businessweek alleging the Chinese military had surreptitiously placed a very small but powerful surveillance hardware on motherboards by a very well-known motherboard manufacturer, Supermicro, and that those had worked their way into a number of high-value locations, including Amazon Web Services and Apple. There's been a lot of pushback on the story, particularly from Amazon and Apple, who just flat-out deny the basic facts of the case. What is your take on it? Because the reporters, sounds like, had conversations with you along the way. And where was your contact with them? And what was the nature of the conversations you had?
One of the reporters reached out to me in December of 2016, but I didn't know any detail of the actual attack or who was involved until the article came out. So there was basically a almost two-year time period of going back and forth. And I sort of felt as a kind of public speaker and hardware hacker and somebody who's always tried to shed light on the hardware hacking world and what could be done, a lot of my time was just spent sort of in generalities explaining about hardware implants, what could be done with supply chain manipulation, and sort of kind of theorizing on some things, but never really confirming anything because I just didn't know the details. So yeah, it's been a long process. And from a general perspective, hardware implants are really interesting. And there's been lots of academic papers about them, lots of theoretical attacks. And we've seen talks of physical implants that would go on a board that would be added on to an existing functioning system. We've seen papers about you know, the potential for chips being modified by the chip manufacturers, which generally in China or Taiwan before put, you know, before they're put on the system. So there's been lots of, you know, lots of talk about this. I've never personally seen real world hardware implants. I talk a lot about them and I give demonstrations and I show examples of sort of theoretical things, but I've still yet to confirm one. And that's why the quote from me in that article was meant to sort of say, because actually I gave that quote a year ago.
Which is an amazing quote, actually.
You know, I didn't know anything about this particular thing. And it was just sort of explaining, like, if a hardware implant is actually done really well, you're not going to know. And I was like, well, how can I describe that in sort of a ridiculous sounding way? Hence the, you know, unicorn jumping over the rainbow. But it really is like, from a hardware perspective, I think about so many different ways that devices could be modified and go undetected from a physical inspection point of view, right? A lot of times with these hardware implants and what a lot of people are pushing back on with this article, myself included, is even if the hardware implant is there and some manipulation has happened on the system, at some point, if you have this command and control happening or potential for command and control, you know, the device is opened up to the internet. Why, if there's any sort of network traffic coming from these compromised devices, why is nobody seeing those? You know, perhaps they're sleeping until they're waiting for some magic sequence of bytes. I don't know. Nobody knows. But it's sort of like if a hardware implant is done well enough, you won't physically see it, but you would see other anomalies in other ways.
One of the interesting things about the story is that they did have a picture of this device. And I'm looking at an email, I think, from Bromium, said that it looks like an SPI bus interposer is the little piece of hardware that they show in the Business Week article. And then they have these cool animated GIF where it, you know, they do a reveal of the motherboard where all the components disappear except for this tiny little grain sized component. But it's not clear to me, and I don't know if you know, I mean, is that the actual component that they discovered?
No.
Does it look like?
Absolutely not. 0%. That is a 100% mock-up. The pictures they show are of some sort of filtering component direct from DigiKey, you know, a electronics component distributor. The mock-up was sort of like, you know, in theory, where could it go and how small could it be? They had actually asked me to mark on a picture of a device where an implant could go, and I refused to do it because I'm not going to theorize about potential attacks without knowing details. I'm not going to create some sort of, you know, FUD and fear, uncertainty and doubt about where something could go. It's just not what I do. So I refused to do it, but they, you know, they went ahead and did something anyway. So yeah, the pictures they show are not the actual device. The photo of that little tiny thing of the location on the board, maybe the location is somewhat similar to where, you know, in theory, if this thing was there, because that's near the BMC, it's near the flash memory, which is possibly where the injection happened. But no, totally mocked up. And the thing with the story is all of the technical aspects of hardware implants are 100% absolutely possible. The story sounds plausible, but until I see physical pictures of the implant, or we see packet captures, or, you know, some other proof, we're just looking at anonymous sources. We're just reading that article and it's anonymous this and anonymous that. And, you know, as a security professional, as a hacker, you have to have a healthy sort of distrust for the media. Including your podcast.
Not Security Ledger podcast.
But that's the thing, is like, we have to be skeptical these days because there's so much misinformation or information maybe that was passed down through multiple people that got twisted around. So I think everything is well and good and it seems to make sense, but...
But that doesn't mean it's true.
No, it doesn't mean it's true. And we're still missing these critical pieces of information. What really does frustrate me about that article, which is not much different than lots of other articles that are these big reveals of attacks and whatever, is it wasn't super clear that the pictures they were showing were not the actual thing, right?
Yes.
Like, it really should have said representative of what it could be or whatever it was. Because I read a lot of comments yesterday at various websites and people were discussing the type of component and it was this and the location and all of that. But it was just very misleading and something from a general reader, you know, of security news, I just feel like they could have done a better job of really either explaining what they actually knew or verifying and kind of explaining what they didn't totally know and what they were speculating about. So there is still a lot of unknown, and I'm wondering if know, in the next few days or the next few weeks, if there will be more information and if maybe somebody leaks a picture, if there is one. You know, there was mention of that third party that was doing the due diligence of this work to who discovered that physical implant in the first place. Like, it would be great to see that. So I don't know. You know, on the other hand, too, I was reading a lot about BMC, baseboard management controller attacks on other sorts of motherboards and stuff yesterday. There's a great website called servethehome.com, STH. And there's a bunch of servers and a bunch of server discussions and forums and things like that. And they had discussed a bunch of other attacks against other types of servers in the past, not hardware implants, but vulnerabilities within the BMC devices on these boards, you know, various types of management interfaces that could be manipulated. So, it, you know, that's why the attack has this sort of semblance of reality. It's just, are all the pieces lined up the right way? And, you know, did it actually happen? If it did, the details need to be out there, because I'm already getting emails from people that are like, how can I look at my own servers and verify if this is right? You know, and like, we just don't know. It's sort of like back in the day when you'd release a vulnerability, you'd find a vulnerability, you'd exploit it and say, here's the problem. But without coming out with a way to fix it, it doesn't really help the community, right? Or the world, really.
And what's really hard about this is that, you know, on the one side, you've got a bunch of anonymous sources. And on the other side, you've got the denials from the companies who are named in this, just flat denials. Just like, this did not happen. There was no breach. There was no investigation. We're not talking to the FBI. We never found these devices. It's like, you know, it's not even like, well, you're making too much of it, or, you know, you got this detail wrong. It's just categorical on both sides, Amazon and Apple. Like, this just did not happen.
And that's really interesting, because it can go either way. Like, I've seen sort of some descriptions of that and saying, well, Amazon and Apple were so, their denials were so, you know, perfectly done, they couldn't be lying. But it can go the other way too. If, you know, anytime there's any major incident, there's going to be denial. Right. When the NSA took over the, you know, had control of the AT&T, what was it? The junction box or whatever. Listening
room. In San Francisco. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's denial everywhere. And
yeah. It's not just a river in Egypt.
No, that's right. But generally the information that comes out first is the information that's remembered. Mm-hmm. So even if there was a retraction of the article or a modification of the article or an admittance of guilt later or some other thing, the article is the main thing people are going to see, and they're going to read the denial and be like, oh, they weren't involved. And other people, you know, say, well, Amazon and Apple are so big, if they were lying, they'd lose a lot of business. You know, our governments lie all the time. And, you know, all these different people and places have denied things over time, including our current administration, and get away with it and continue to get away with it. So the fact that they're making a denial doesn't mean anything about any truth. You know, they're a big corporation. I have a healthy distrust for big corporations anyway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would like to give them the grain of salt, because I know people that work within the security departments at both Amazon and Apple, and they're super, super talented. Some of the smartest people I know, but they don't control the message that goes out the door, you know? So yeah. I think just like the article, we need to take the denials with that same sort of skepticism and say, okay, maybe they really didn't know, so they're denying it.
Yeah.
But there still could have been an attack. Maybe they did know and they were trying to cover it up, so they're denying it. Whatever it is, we just don't know. So it's too hard to speculate. And you know, the internet likes to speculate. My whole thing has always been, since I was a kid, talking about hardware vulnerabilities and everything, is hardware really is overlooked. A lot of times hardware is just not on the radar, mm-hmm. right? People are looking at networks. They are looking at software attacks and web app attacks and all this stuff. So I feel like it's very easy to get things through in hardware, because most places don't have mechanisms in place to do visual inspection and incoming inspection and check the quality of components and make sure every subsystem is right. You know, it's just a very, very hard problem in the hardware space. So from an attack perspective, it's like this wide open canvas.
It's like a permanent foothold. It's something that you get at great expense, but the payoff is that there's very low chance of it being uncovered or detected.
Exactly. Exactly. Unless there's a process in place for that, which if you're ordering 7,000 servers or whatever, you're not going to open up and look at each one.
No.
If you do a spot, you know, if you do a spot check, you might open one up and configure it and make sure it's okay. If I was Supermicro or if I was an engineer working on a motherboard or whatever it was, I would verify, you know, the prototype. I would check the first few samples coming off the line to make sure they were okay before the system went into production. But as soon as a piece of hardware goes into production, the engineers never look at it again. It's it ends up being manufacturing people and test people. And this is something like with all the products that I've manufactured and have sold through time, it's the same thing. Like once I approve it and it goes to production, I never look at it again. Right. I just trust that it's going to be the same.
If we take the, you know, the mock-up that Bloomberg did and imagine we are talking about a sort of, you know, grain of rice sized component on a, you know, fairly large, complex motherboard with hundreds or even thousands of other components on it. What would be the process for identifying that little grain of rice that is not supposed to be there? I mean, human brains are really not well developed to do that type of analysis. Are there specialized visual analysis tools that you can use or power analysis, or how would you do it?
Yes and no. There's a whole bunch of different ways. And thinking from, you know, like a manufacturing perspective, if a board is being manufactured, they have what's called automated optical inspection. So a system will be assembled, populated by a robot, essentially. It would get soldered, get assembled, and then there'd be a machine that would optically inspect and make sure all the components are soldered on properly in the right places. If you had a situation where if you had what a known good gold standard would look like, and then you did a comparison or an optical inspection, the robot would detect that. It would say, wait a second, there's something here that's not on the original gold standard comparison thing. However, most people don't have that capability because as end users, we don't know what a good device is supposed to look like. So I do think, though, the human brain is really good at sort of, I don't know if it's pattern matching or something, and maybe it's just me being used to looking at a lot of hardware, but generally, even if you have a complex board like, you know, one of these big microblades with a lot of components, you generally, as an attacker anyway, you would focus on kind of the main parts of the board that would serve as a good attack vector. So you're looking at the BMC, you're seeing what's connected to that. So you'd have your SPI flash, you'd have your, you know, your memory contents for the file system, maybe your BIOS is going to be around there. So you'd look for sort of those areas and then kind of analyze like, okay, if those devices are normally there, let's look at the bus and see how those are connected, you know, the physical mm-hmm. wires on the circuit board, physical traces on the board, and just look for anomalies. But it's hard because if a device is malicious but built onto the board, then an end user isn't going to know the difference between the malicious one and the normal functioning one, unless they really spend some time reverse engineering it to figure out the function of each device on the board. But generally, you look at the large picture, you identify the major parts on the board, you zoom into those. But it would be very easy for somebody to then, you know, stick the malicious component somewhere else on the board to just blend in and just run traces on an inside layer
right
to the target chip. So there's so many ways to hide anyway. But I think, you know, with some maybe computer vision or automated optical inspection or something for comparison, but there really isn't that option right now.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you definitely don't want me inspecting your blades. I would be terrible at that job.
But somebody who knows what they're looking at, you know, it is easy to identify major areas or areas that you would want to compromise. It's just then actually verifying for sure. So it would be great to know, like some, you know, there's been some implants or pictures of supposed implants that are very big and, you know, wires soldered to test points on a board mm-hmm. and things that would be very obvious of like, somebody has messed with this. And we've heard of, you know, the stories of the NSA, TAO, mm-hmm, and the AMP mm-hmm. catalog of selling different hardware implants. Those are going to be bigger visible things that get added on once the system has been manufactured. But if you're talking about implants like this one in the article where the implant is built onto the board, then it makes it a little harder. But if we knew what it looked like, and if we knew what a normal board was supposed to look like, then we could get down to the business of doing some kind of, you know, physical comparison.
Right. I mean, the other thing that rang true about this story to me, regardless of whether it is in fact true, is the targeting of a company like Supermicro that is a supplier to all of these downstream companies and organizations, including perhaps the intelligence sector. That would be a target for a nation state actor who wanted that type of access.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it seems totally reasonable. Supermicro, along with every other manufacturer that has, you know, servers at scale in large places, you know, it's also very likely if one manufacturer has been compromised, other ones have as well. So, you know, the blame shouldn't just fall on Supermicro or whatever. I think it's, you know, if this is true, then I think we need to start looking at every other device. I don't want to say every other device coming out of China because that's sort of ridiculous, but, you know, any other critical networking infrastructure that's coming out of China or that's coming out of any untrusted facility, really. You know, Supermicro actually had in their denial of the events yesterday, They had said, we use subcontractor facilities, which is not abnormal. That's true. And they basically had said, everybody else uses these same subcontractor facilities. Lots of people use outsourced manufacturing facilities that aren't totally trusted, or even if they are, they could still be compromised through insider threat, through pressure, political pressure, financial pressure, strong arming, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you don't really know what goes on inside these factories. You just trust that what you get back is what you order.
Well, and this story comes along, quoting anonymously many administration and former administration officials, at a time, at a political moment when the Trump administration is targeting China with sanctions, making a lot of noise about its desire to repatriate parts of the supply chain, targeting the supply chain vendors with sanctions. You do wonder if this is all serving some larger political narrative.
Oh, for sure. And that, that wouldn't surprise me either. The fact that the research has been going on for so long, the supposed original event was 2015. And then this article was going on for so long, again, with major media outlets, with any media outlets, with the current state of the government, with, political pressures, it wouldn't surprise me if things were being held off or released early to, forward Trump's agenda or to forward anybody else's agenda. I think the timing is unfortunate because it maybe is now going to be used as this vehicle, even if it was unintentionally that way, it's now going to be used as a vehicle to sort of shame China. And that's not the right approach. I don't think it's just China. It's any time we're using a manufacturing facility that we don't trust or that we don't control. It could be in the United States also. There's no difference. The location of the factory really isn't the point, except, I think this article now gives ammunition to the people that want it to say, look, it's all China's fault. It's a ridiculous claim. And, the United States have done implants also. And it's just unfortunate. It takes away from the actual interesting sort of hardware security problem and makes it a political issue. And the timing seems very, coincidental that it came out now right after or right during all of the tariff stuff. And it's just the shaming of China. And I don't know, it is very, very kind of interesting and fishy.
Okay, so regardless of whether people believe it, executives believe it, there are a lot of executives with kind of white knuckles over this story, worried about what's in their data center, or if they're technology executives whose companies manufacture, hardware devices, worried about the integrity of their supply chain. Joe Grand, hardware expert, what are your words of wisdom to those executives?
That's a hard one. I think for products that you have in house that you've ordered off the shelf, I don't have a good solution with, existing stuff. Maybe it's just be more aware of the behavior and the performance of the systems that you have. But it's a really hard issue, and there's just so many ways to hide, like I talked about, and so many ways that things could go wrong that, I don't really have a good answer. Now, for systems that are being manufactured, if you're a vendor that is creating products, I think compartmentalization is an important one, which means keep your manufacturing facilities separate. So whoever is designing your circuit board doesn't have insight into the firmware that's being loaded onto the device. The person who's the company who's programming your chips is not the same person who is assembling the circuit board. But yeah, I think this is sort of a new field, at least new as far as coming to the public light. And there's not really a lot of good solutions. I think awareness is the first step of just knowing that this type of stuff can happen. And, it's been talked about for years, again, in papers and presentations. But if this real world thing really happened, it's a wake up call. And it's just another entry point and another sort of vector that people can use to compromise security, which, is just another challenge to deal with.
Bloomberg Business Week, did they get it right or did they not get it right?
I think the jury is still out. I don't know. I think we'll have to wait and see.
I could have told you the jury was out.
Maybe somebody will have some piece of information in the future, but as of yet, jury's still out. That's my opinion.
Joe Grand, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us on the Security Ledger podcast.
My pleasure. Talk to you later.
Joe Grand is a hardware engineer, hardware hacker, and the principal at Grand Idea Studios. Up next, the U.S. Department of Justice joined its counterparts in the United Kingdom and Netherlands last week, issuing indictments of 7 Russian nationals that it alleges are officers of Russia's GRU intelligence service who were responsible for a wide-ranging campaign of hacking, data theft, and disinformation. The targets were a laundry list of organizations that had run afoul of the Kremlin in recent years. They include the World Anti-Doping Agency, whose work uncovered a massive state-sponsored doping campaign by the Russian government and resulted in the banning of Russian athletes from 2 Olympics. Also, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, or the OPCW, which conducted tests of nerve agents recovered from a poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in London. What do the indictments reveal about Russia's cyber offensive capabilities, and will naming and shaming Russian GRU officers have any impact on the activities of the GRU, the Russian FSB, or other state-sponsored actors? To find out, we invited Adam Myers, the Vice President of Intelligence at the firm CrowdStrike, back into the Security Ledger studio. Adam says that CrowdStrike has been observing the attacks against WADA and OPCW for a couple years, but that the indictments released last week still revealed the details of the operations that surprised him.
Adam Myers, Vice President of Intelligence. The WADA and Anti-Doping Agency and a number of the athletic organizations that were targeted, we've been observing that going back 2 years now. And, you know, that was really when we actually saw the emergence of the Fancy Bear hacking team or the Fancy Bear International hacking team, when they actually took the name that we were using to describe the activity of the DNC.
Yeah.
Was back in August or so, 2016. So it was not particularly anything that we hadn't been tracking. I think some of the revelations out of the Netherlands regarding the actual close-in access and some of the Wi-Fi and some of the things that they disclosed were particularly interesting and something that we hadn't been aware of.
Yeah. So just to clarify for the listeners who haven't gone through and read the indictment, one of the things that's alleged, and this was done in cooperation with authorities in the UK and Netherlands and elsewhere, is that the GRU operatives, when they were thwarted or felt like they hit a wall trying to get access to certain networks or individuals, would actually go in person and do close up hacking of hotel Wi-Fi and other infrastructure to gain better access to a particular target.
Yeah, in fact, if you look at the some of the stuff that DOJ was releasing, they had a number of interesting pictures that they released. And some of the pictures included a vehicle that they had rented, taken to outside of the chemical weapons watchdog, and they had in the trunk a 12-volt battery associated with 4G access point and some Wi-Fi gear. Mm. And they surreptitiously hid an antenna under a jacket and parked this thing right outside of their headquarters, presumably for either remote or direct access to the Wi-Fi network of that facility, which that is a pretty substantial operation that we haven't really seen too much of in the past.
Kind of theorized, right? We knew that the tools and means existed, but haven't seen it used, actually evidence that it's been used in the wild, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there have been anecdotal cases. There were a number of cases, you know, in the earlier part of the decade when they had used this for criminal activities, when, you know, a lot of retailers weren't using any encrypted Wi-Fi or anything like that, and they were using that to try to siphon out credit card information and things of that nature. But, you know, to see Russia sending intelligence officers to a target country undercover, that's definitely a step up from what we've seen in the past.
One of the interesting targets, of course, was Westinghouse Corporation here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What do we know about that particular intrusion?
There's not too much that's been publicly disclosed other than what was in the indictment. So I think I had seen that Westinghouse may have been involved in selling sensitive materials to the Ukraine. So that could be likely why they were targeted.
is the effort here? I mean, we know how much Ukraine has suffered under Russian cyber offensive activity. Is the idea perhaps to steal information that could then be used in an attack, or more traditional kind of industrial espionage for the benefit of, you know, domestic firms?
I think it would have been for intelligence collection purposes in the case of Westinghouse to understand what, if any, things they were selling to Ukrainian companies. The stuff from WADA, the MH17, could have been used for political influence or what we call an influence operation. This is, you know, a lot of the things mentioned in that indictment included what we kind of call fake-tivism. This is a fake hacktivist group that is likely controlled by GRU and Russian operatives that were using the kind of motivation of ideological motivated hacktivist group as cover for disseminating information, sensitive information, or things that might be embarrassing to targets of theirs. So I think that, you know, part of the intrusion in collecting some of the information that they were collecting from the WADA, IOC, MH17, and Malaysian organizations, the chemical weapons group, I think a lot of that could have been dual purpose for intelligence purposes as well as potential influence operations.
You know, we talk about these as advanced persistent threats, but when you read the indictment, once again, you know, registering lookalike domain names, using phishing email to get people to give up credentials. There is some custom malware they talk about, and I don't know if CrowdStrike has any insight into that particular component of these attacks that you can talk about. But the nuts and bolts of these campaigns, at least the distance campaigns, seems not particularly technically sophisticated.
I think the advanced persistent threat has always been kind of a euphemism for nation-state espionage or nation-state intrusion activity.
Yeah.
The malware, in the case of Fancy Bear, and there were two kind of Russian actors that have been covered in some of these things. The British NCSC report, I guess, that came out also included discussion of Bad Rabbit, which was last October. Important for your listeners to know, you know, we're coming back into that holiday. I believe it's the UK Constitution Day, which is on or around the October 14th date. These are historically where we've seen an actor we track as Voodoo Bear targeting Ukraine, and NotPetya, for example, was one that we observed. This Voodoo Bear actor, we believe, is tied to that, and they targeted Ukraine around the Ukraine Defender Day. So there's other holidays that are coming up where we might see additional offensive activity from some of these actors. In the case of Fancy Bear, their malware has been pretty well understood for a while. They use a lot of other tools as well, kind of as the preliminary stage or the first phase of their attack, and ultimately try to deliver their finished implant, their kind of comprehensive implant, to the targets of interest. So there's quite a bit known about these actors, and I don't think that there are too many details necessarily in the indictment or any of the other reports that came out pertaining to technical indicators or technical overlaps. A lot of what was being released and disclosed was pertaining to the tactics, techniques, and procedures that these actors were using and how they conducted these types of attacks, and really tying it back to the human element and who those humans are so they could ultimately, you know, hopefully, I guess, try to get them into a courtroom and actually try them.
On that, what do you think is the importance of the indictment and also of naming these individuals, which I know historically hasn't happened so much in intelligence circles? What do you think this will do, if anything, to either encourage, discourage future operations like this?
Well, they won't be going to Disney World anytime soon. But I think the
maybe Disney World Paris. I guess not even there.
Probably not, though. But I don't know that we have any way to really assess that. It certainly makes the world a smaller place for some of these actors who, you know, in some of the other pictures that were disclosed, you could see one of the operatives had gone to Brazil for the Olympics and things like that. So it does make the world a smaller place. It does, you know, the exposure in Bellingcat, if you're familiar with them, they published quite a bit of other reporting in the last week, and some of the operational security lapses by the Russian intelligence services appear to be pretty pretty distinctive, and it, you know, brought a lot of visibility to things that probably they would have preferred not to have visibility in.
They were
so it yeah. You know,
they were able to backtrack from some car registration database to identify what they claim is 300 plus GRU agents, basically by their car registration.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So the ultimately, I think you have a couple of choices here. You could either do nothing, which probably doesn't work. You can name and shame and hope that that brings some visibility and brings some additional attention to what they're doing. And there's probably some other options that I'm not aware of or wouldn't necessarily speculate about for that. But, ultimately, I think it shows a concerted effort, in this case by international intelligence and law enforcement, to bring some of these things to light and send the message that, hey, this isn't going to go unchecked if you can't do this.
Adam Myers of CrowdStrike, thanks so much for coming in and speaking to us on the Security Ledger podcast.
Thanks.
Adam Myers is the Vice President of Intelligence at the firm CrowdStrike.